KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ audience.
19 cases, that is a mix of Delta and Omicron. We're still seeing predominantly Delta, but the percentage of Omicron is rising. And we anticipate that Omicron is likely to overtake Delta sometime in January. But currently, we're still seeing mostly Delta infections. Nationally, we're diagnosing about 133,000 cases of COVID-19 a day. That's up 21% in the last week. Hospitalizations are also up about 16% in the last week nationally, and deaths are up as well. So we're seeing about 1,300 deaths due to COVID-19 a day. We have surpassed 800,000 deaths due to COVID-19 in this country. In Washington state, we are actually bucking that trend. So we are holding steady in the last week. We're not seeing cases rise significantly in Washington state at this time. And actually the same is holding true for Jefferson County. So our total number of cases at this point is 1,387. Our current case rate is 180 per 100,000. So holding relatively steady in the last week. We do have 3 people currently hospitalized for COVID-19. So a total of 82 hospitalizations so far in this response. We've had no new deaths in Jefferson County, so holding steady at 20 there. In Clallam County, we are seeing cases rise a bit faster. We do have a lower vaccination rate in Clallam County. Cases are up to 5,665. Current case rate there is 358 per 100,000, and we have 8 people currently hospitalized. We had a pretty significant surge in hospitalizations in Clallam over the weekend, mostly traced to indoor gatherings of largely unvaccinated folks, unfortunately. I've had a total of 77 deaths in Clallam County so far. So I think the biggest thing that most people have a lot of questions about right now is the Omicron variant and what does it mean for us? So we are seeing that it is incredibly transmissible, and that is the primary driver of it starting to overtake Delta. In some parts of the country, it's actually already starting to overtake Delta, but we're anticipating seeing that happen sometime in January in this state. We do have 15 cases in Clallam County that are tracing to the wrestling outbreaks that have shown to be positive for Omicron. Our sequencing on our individual cases is still outstanding. It takes a couple of weeks to come back. But since their source case was Omicron, we highly suspect that those cases are Omicron as well. We're also seeing a significant rise in Omicron in King County. So knowing that Jefferson is between those two, statistically, we likely have Omicron here as well, even though we haven't gotten any sequencing back. We're looking very closely at the wrestling cases. Unfortunately, we have about 200 cases statewide that trace to that Omicron outbreak, and so we are getting a lot of data about it. We are seeing increased rates of breakthrough infections. We're also seeing increased rates of reinfections in that group. So among the Clallam County group, we're seeing people who were reinfected within 3 months of their last infection. So that's really supporting the idea that prior infection alone is not enough to protect from Omicron. We are definitely seeing increased reinfection and unfortunately increased breakthrough infection as well. The good news there, though, is that the vaccines, even if you don't get a booster, the vaccines are showing very strong protection against hospitalization and death from Omicron, and the boosters are showing very strong protection against symptomatic disease. So if you get a booster for COVID-19, it really should protect you quite well against Omicron. We're seeing about 70 to 80% protection against any disease at all if you get your booster. So that's part of why we're pushing really hard for folks to go ahead and get their boosters as we move into the holiday season. We did have a very successful booster and kids vaccination event in Chimicum this weekend. I was really happy to see so many folks coming out from the community to get their boosters. It's a really important step you can take to protect yourself and protect others. Even with the increased rates of breakthrough infection that we're seeing with Omicron, we're still seeing that the majority of infections right now are among the unvaccinated. And that's concerning because there was some initial thought that the Omicron variant would be less severe based on some early data coming out of South Africa. But what we're seeing is if you are COVID-19 naive, so if you haven't had a prior infection, if you haven't been vaccinated, that Omicron is showing the ability to be just as severe as prior variants. But if you are vaccinated, you are much, much less likely to get severe disease, much less likely to get hospitalized. And so when it comes to Omicron, what I really see here is that a lot of folks who have been really questioning the COVID-19 pandemic have been saying, oh, it's no worse than the flu. And that's never been true. But if you get vaccinated, it can be. And so the goal of getting us all vaccinated is to make COVID-19 turn into the flu, make it be something that if you get it, we don't get hospitalized, we don't overtake the hospital system, and we can make it more of a normal thing. But the way we do that is by getting vaccinated. And I talked to a lot of folks at the booster event this weekend to let them know that their booster does provide them really, really good protection. So the way I think about it is, you know, if you were fully vaccinated back in the summer, we were talking a lot about how you're really well protected, you can largely live your life. What we really want you to do is for that to now be boosted. If you are boosted, then the same things start to apply. You can start to gather indoors again, things like that. But we really need as many of us as possible to get boosted to make that happen. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions from our commissioners before we move into the KPTZ questions.
I have a question, Dr. Barry. It was great to see you at the event this Saturday. My wife and I both got boosted, as well as I saw Willie Bintz there too. Another great, well-run event. You know, I thought about going to one of the pharmacies, but man, it's just in and out. They're just great. So just really kudos. Can we be consistent with Omicron instead of Omicron? Can we figure out our vernacular? I don't know Greek at all. I like Omicron. I don't know.
I personally prefer Omicron. I think we're starting to move towards majority Omicron, a little bit of Omicron. Anthony Fauci still says Omicron, so I think that's going to stick around for a little while. Both are acceptable pronunciations of this new variant.
And my real question about Omicron, I guess, is there a silver lining? Does evidence still pointing to less serious infection, less deaths? Is this like maybe a step on the way, as you say, where COVID is more like an endemic flu? I mean, is there a silver lining to it, I guess, is my question.
Sure. I mean, if you are vaccinated, if you're fully vaccinated, yes, we are seeing less severe infection with Omicron. And so in that way, there's a silver lining. But if you are unvaccinated, we are not seeing less severe. We're seeing similar severity of infection. So unfortunately, just the sheer number of people who are unvaccinated and who will likely contract Omicron because it's so transmissible could still overwhelm the healthcare system. But that is preventable. So if we all get vaccinated, if enough of us get vaccinated, Omicron could make this more like the flu. But we need the vaccines as well to make that happen. And I think the other really hopeful thing for me is that the booster really works. I hear from a lot of family and friends who take COVID-19 seriously, who have been taking it seriously this whole time and who are worried that they're going to have to cancel all their plans for the holidays because of Omicron. And what I would say is if you are boosted, you don't have to. You're going to have an indoor unmasked gathering for Christmas. I would really encourage folks to be boosted as you go into that space. And then you can still have an enjoyable, safe holiday dinner.
And is it still, so I got mine on Saturday, so I'm all the way boosted in 14 days after that.
You're going to start getting some protection within about a week of your booster, but you are fully protected 2 weeks after your booster. Then, you'll have some good protection by this next upcoming holiday.
Everyone's vaccinated in their holiday gathering, so I'm feeling very comfortable. And then my last kind of crystal ball question is, as these variants continue to evolve and, you know, with, you know, most of the world under vaccinated, it seems like inevitable that they will continue. It seems like natural evolution of this virus is going towards transmissibility over being lethal, which is, of course, better for the virus to survive and propagate and everything. So I guess I'm wondering, is there a potential for a more devastating, more deadly variant to take hold now? Or are we kind of in the place where it's going to be transmissibility and your ability to survive it that's going to allow variants to evolve?
Generally, you're always going to see selection for transmissibility, but every once in a while, you can get a severity mutation that is severe enough to get people hospitalized, but not severe enough to kind of end transmission. And that's really what happened with Delta. And so I would say we can't entirely relax. We can't say, you know, for sure this is going to get less and less severe as it goes. Sometimes you can see severity mutations in there that are just bad enough to make it really uncomfortable for us, but not bad enough to prevent transmission. So I think we can't entirely relax yet, but generally that is the way that evolution of viruses goes, is they get more transmissible, less severe. And of course, you know, we do get some degree of immunity from prior infection. And so that also provides some protection against hospitalization and death as well. So that will also lend us to a less severe virus over time.
Great. Thank you. And then final question, and I'll shut up. Continuing to have conversations with folks that are resistant to getting the vaccines. And I was wondering if you could quickly talk about the difference. It seems like a lot of people that I talk to that are resistant to the idea or afraid are talking about their personal health, that you know, that they feel confident that they would survive it and that the potential side effects are more serious to them, or the lack of their sovereignty of their body. And sure. I was wondering if you could quickly go into population health versus personal health, which is, I think, an important focus for making decisions in this, and just kind of, probably make a more eloquent argument for using population health as the focus for our own decision-making matrix.
Sure. So happy to do my best. And this actually kind of gets to one of the KPTZ questions that we got, which is, you know, if I decide not to get vaccinated, why is that anybody's business but mine? And the key thing there is that if you don't get vaccinated, your probability of getting and transmitting COVID to other people is much, much higher. And so that individual decision that feels like an individual decision actually affects countless people around you. It affects your family. It affects your coworkers. It affects anyone that you're going to sit next to on the bus who could be high risk and could die. And so if you are young and healthy, the primary reason to get vaccinated is to protect your neighbors. It is a community-minded decision. And it's really something you can do to protect the other people in your life. The other thing that matters is not only that it does improve, it reduces your risk of contracting COVID, it reduces your risk of transmitting COVID, but it also reduces your own risk of getting hospitalized and dying, which does matter. If we all get hospitalized, or if many of us get hospitalized all at the same time, that reduces access to hospital resources for everyone else. And we don't have to look back that far to see that happen. So in Clallam County in particular, we got hit really hard. And we saw hospital resources not being available to other people who needed them for non-COVID reasons. People who had strokes, who then couldn't get the care they needed and had permanent disability because of it. So you getting hospitalized actually does affect the people around you. I think in the United States, we often like to think of ourselves as these individual islands, but we're not. We're members of a community, and our actions affect the people around us. Even if it feels like we're just harming ourselves, we all share the same resources. And so if we take a bunch of those that we didn't have to, it actually does take them away from other people. And then, of course, the only other thing, I know we've talked about this a lot, but just to reiterate, the vaccines are incredibly safe. There are rare potential severe side effects. The one you probably hear about the most is myocarditis. But again, your risk of myocarditis is so, so much higher from COVID-19 than it is from the vaccine itself. So say you're young and healthy, say you're a guy in your 20s, and you say, I bet I can kick COVID-19 if I get it. You might. Or you might actually get myocarditis, get hospitalized and die, or get hospitalized and have severe chronic myocarditis, significant damage to your heart long-term from contracting the virus. And your risk of long-term myocarditis is dramatically higher from the virus than it is from the vaccine. Generally, if you are one of the incredibly unlucky folks who gets myocarditis from your vaccine, it resolves independently. You go back to your normal life. But if you get myocarditis from COVID, often we see chronic inflammation of the heart and reduced heart function for life. And we have seen that in many athletes who contracted COVID-19 who now no longer can play their sports because they have had long-term damage to their heart from the COVID-19 virus. So I would not roll the dice on COVID-19. It's getting more and more transmissible. So the probability that you get it is getting higher and higher. And the vaccine is incredibly safe and effective to protect yourself, but also critically to protect your neighbors, your family, and your friends. All right.
Can I ask a question, please? I'm curious, as we enter into this kind of new phase with more information, with a relatively high vaccination rate, do you see our response changing in any substantive way? So I hear discussions about things like managing for disease instead of managing for infection, or being quite so concerned about case rates. And I think where this discussion most is in relation to schools, how will decisions be made about whether to keep schools open when we see very little disease in school-aged kids. So I know this is fairly high level and probably a little early, but I'm just curious how you're thinking about that question.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're really looking at is how do we make this response sustainable? Now that we've been in it for approximately 2 years for your public health department and soon to be 2 years for everybody else, how do we fight this virus in a way that allows us to continue to fight it as long as we need to without having significant negative consequences that we don't need to? And so one of the key places we look at that is schools. Keeping kids out of school has significant negative consequences for those children and for their families. So what we do now is we really prioritize things like contact tracing and quarantine to our highest risk areas of the school. So when we're contact tracing, we really focus our efforts on the places where transmission is the most likely to happen, things like buses, things like mealtime. And so in many spaces where we now have enough data to know that those kids are going to do well and be safe, we don't actually do the level of granular intensive contact tracing that we used to do. So one of the places that we see that is things like classrooms. In fully masked classrooms, we actually don't see high levels of transmission in those spaces. And so one of the things we did was we pulled a relatively large data set from Clallam County, from the kids that we were quarantining from classrooms. And so we saw that in fully masked classrooms, those kids by and large weren't getting COVID. And so we don't need to quarantine kids in a fully masked classroom in the way that we used to. The other thing that we are doing is we're really leaning more on testing. So even if you're exposed to COVID-19, if we can keep you in a classroom in a masked setting and test you very frequently, we've found that we can prevent large-scale outbreaks in those settings as well. So we're tweaking our response. We're leaning on testing where we can. We're certainly still relying on things like masks that reduce transmission while keeping kids in school. And so those are some of the ways that we're pivoting our work. And then at the public health department, a lot of where we're focusing our contact tracing, which is the most time intensive thing that we do, is on areas where we see significant morbidity and mortality and we see widespread outbreaks. And so a lot of our efforts, we prioritize our contact tracing to places like long-term care. So if someone comes up in a contact tracing, it turns out they're a nurse at a long-term care facility, we jump on that case and really focus our efforts there to prevent transmission in those high-risk settings more than we would focus our efforts on someone who, say, can work from home. So you'll see a little bit of that shift more and more down the road. And unfortunately, great, until enough of us get vaccinated, there is still a correlation between case rates and hospitalizations. So we've gotten a lot of us vaccinated, but we need even more of us to get vaccinated and get boosted to make sure that we really can break that chain between transmitting the virus and then getting hospitalized for the virus.
Especially in one of the oldest counties in the country.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Heidi, you had a question?
Yeah, so I'm back to my holiday theme.
Yes.
I guess it's not the turkey confidential, it's the Christmas confidential this time. So happy holidays, Dr. Berry, for whatever holidays you celebrate. I hope you're planning something fun over the next couple of weeks with your family. And my question is about rapid tests. Mm-hmm. So we did that at Thanksgiving. Everybody piled into the greenhouse before they came in my house and did their rapid test and had a cocktail. And They were all negative. So we were good. We were planning on doing that again before our Christmas celebration with some friends. And the question I've been getting is, where do we get our rapid tests? There seems to be a short supply of rapid tests right now. So do you have any secret wisdom?
So yeah, rapid tests can be hard to come by. There are so many of us needing them now, by a mix of us planning for travel and holiday gatherings, and also just the sheer number of respiratory illnesses that are going around right now. So if you have a runny nose, you want to get tested and figure out if you have COVID. So we are seeing them show up in short supply. There's not a quick fix for that challenge. I would keep looking. Often I've found some folks can find them online. So some of the pharmacies have online ordering. And if you order now, you might be able to get it before Christmas. And then if you can't find enough for your whole party, then you really want to prioritize your antigen tests to the folks in your party that are the highest risk. And so that's your unvaccinated folks. If you have fully vaccinated folks come in your party, but some of them haven't had their boosters yet, then I would prioritize getting your unboosted folks tested. You could potentially prioritize your unboosted folks who traveled. So really looking at your highest risk folks for your gathering. One question we got actually was about antigen tests, and we had given kind of a list of some of the most reliable ones that we know of so far. So just a quick review for folks. That's the Binax Now, that's Access Care Start, that's the BD Veritor, the Quidel, and there's a couple more now that we've got. So there's QCUE is another one that we've verified through the Washington State Department of Health. And then there's a new one that was just approved in early December called iHealth, that you might be seeing on store shelves. That one we have not used at the Department of Health, but looking at the early data on that one, it was about 94% sensitive compared to PCR. So it's a good test. So if you're seeing any of those available on local shelves, they are a good option. And then the only other thing I would encourage folks is, knowing that there's not infinite capacity for testing, to be thoughtful in your use of testing. So say you're having a large gathering, try to prioritize those to the most critical folks so that your neighbor can get some too. And we still want you to get tested if you're sick. So if you have any symptoms at all, even if you're fully vaccinated, you want to get an antigen test or utilize one of the other testing options available to you. We've got a whole list on the website, but you can use the drive-through testing as well.
Thank you.
I think they will be in some degree of short supply, unfortunately.
Are all of the home test kits, I know you were just listing the ones that you feel are effective, and that applies to Omicron as well?
Good question. Yes, the antigen test kits are still good for Omicron. The Omicron mutations do not affect their ability to be caught by actually any of the available current testing modalities. Even if you get a PCR, some will see what's called an S dropout on your PCR, but you'll still test positive. So you can still trust the results. But with antigen tests, the key is to take them as close to your activity as possible. So if you're having a dinner, taking it right before that dinner, taking it right before that high risk interaction, because it is really a matter of hours, really in the 24 hour range at this point, that you can really trust the results of that test.
Okay. And sorry, Greg, I'm in the Omicron camp.
Why make an argument for Omicron? What's why Omicron?
It was in my figure skating history. We worked through the Greek alphabet, and that was the levels of figure skating, and it was Omicron. So I've always called it that. So it's hard for me to readjust.
Both are acceptable. We will show some tolerance to our different pronunciations here.
Thank you.
It's good practice.
All right, should we go with KPDZ questions?
Sure. So we got, again, a lot of questions, a lot of really good questions. And so I will get through as many as I can. And if we don't get through some this week, they'll be at the top of the line for next week. So one person wrote in with, I think, a really empathetic concern about the issue of vaccine equity in the world, and seeing that there are many parts of the world where vaccines are still not available, and certainly not boosters. And so the question this person had was, if enough of us delay getting our booster until, say, next year, will that Will that be enough? Will that cause the vaccines to go to those who need them? And the truth is, unfortunately, no. It's a lot more complex than that. Initially, the issue of vaccine equity was all about total numbers of vaccine. We were, in the United States, frankly, hoarding vaccine and not sending it to the rest of the world. Now we are not anymore. We are sending vaccine to other parts of the world, but unfortunately, we are not sending it with the technical wherewithal for how to distribute it. And so you forgoing a vaccine booster here actually won't help anybody in another part of the world. And so I highly support and respect the thought behind that assertion. And I like that we're thinking about vaccine equity in the world, but it actually won't help anybody. And in fact, getting the booster will help people here. It will help you make sure you're less likely to transmit the virus. But continuing to advocate, especially at the federal level, for technical support to the Global South to do this kind of vaccine distribution, I think that's really where we'll have the strongest effect. Other questions. One was talking about looking at titer levels for antibodies. So one of the big questions people have been having is, how do I know if I'm immune? How do I know if I'm immune from my prior infection? How do I know if I'm immune from my vaccine? There really should be a test that I could take that could show me. And I agree. There are scientists working on that right now, but it's actually a very complex problem because not all antibodies are equal. So for instance, when we looked at some of the earliest data around Omicron and vaccine breakthrough was these mixing studies where they would take blood samples from people who were fully vaccinated and who had developed antibodies again from the prior vaccine, and then they would mix it with Omicron, and the presence of those antibodies, they actually weren't as able to neutralize the virus. And so if you did a blood test, you're just counting antibodies, but you're not actually assessing their effectiveness at neutralizing a virus. So it's a really complex problem. What I would say is we are very likely to get to the point where we have a titer. We have those for other illnesses. So if you're a medical professional, you probably had to get your titers drawn to prove that you were immune to measles, for example. I know I did, but it took us, it was years after the measles vaccine before we had that titer. So I don't think it'll be in short order, unfortunately. What we're really going to have to rely on is population level data on the effectiveness of things like vaccines, the effectiveness of prior infection. So if you have been fully vaccinated and boosted, just to reiterate, our current available evidence is you are highly protected against infection. If you have had prior infection and gotten a vaccine series, even without a booster, you are highly protected against infection. So you really just need the two shots if you had a prior infection. So it does save you one shot, and that's something. But just having prior infection alone is not enough to protect you from the Omicron variant. So do go ahead and get vaccinated, but you don't necessarily have to get a booster if you have a documented prior infection, because basically that's kind of acting like your first shot. All right, couple other quick, we'll move through and be as quick as we can. So my husband and I have been fully vaccinated with Moderna. He got a Pfizer booster and I got a Moderna booster. Are we both equally protected against Omicron, even though the Moderna booster is only half dose? And the answer is yes, actually. So we are seeing equal protection from the different mRNA boosters, potentially actually slightly higher protection from the Moderna booster than from the Pfizer booster. But either of the mRNA vaccines are both really good for boosters. And if there is a Moderna advantage, it's small. And so really, I would take whatever booster is available to you. You might see different data presented in the media about Pfizer or Moderna. Usually that just comes from individual countries that use exclusively one. So if you see South African data that really talks about Pfizer, that's just because that's pretty much the only vaccine that they can use. They don't have enough Moderna for large scale trials. But in this country, we've studied both, and both are equally effective at this point at preventing symptomatic disease from Omicron. So, and what they studied with the boosters with Moderna was a smaller dose, still very, very effective. And you don't have to worry that you didn't get the larger dose, because we saw the same level of antibody response and an adequate response. All right. This next person shares that the media seems to be reporting conflicting information as it relates to the booster shots and the Omicron virus. And I just want to take a moment to empathize with that. It is very confusing to navigate the media landscape right now. And I think a lot of that comes from there's such a pressure to get information out as fast as possible that sometimes, unfortunately, we see media outlets move forward with really dramatic headlines that the data just doesn't back up. And so if you're seeing things that seem like they're disagreeing, it is probably that. It's that really the best thing to report for the first couple weeks of the Omicron variant was we don't know yet. But that's not a very satisfying headline. And so you might see some dueling headlines showing up. But what we're going to do in this program is give you the best data we have as we go. And I will tell you if we don't know yet. The good news is that each week we learn more and more about the Omicron variant. And so what we know now is it's more transmissible. It is not necessarily less severe in unvaccinated people, but it is less severe if you've received two doses of your vaccine. And it is, we are seeing very good effect against preventing any symptomatic disease if you've gotten your booster. There's some question in this question about whether you need to wait for a variant-specific vaccine. You do not. In fact, we may not see a variant-specific vaccine. We are seeing really good efficacy from the regular Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. And so I would not wait for a specific vaccine. I would go ahead and get your booster as soon as one is available. This next person is writing about the proof of vaccination order. So the question they were raising is, why can't you take an antigen test in order to get into a restaurant if you are unvaccinated? And it's a really valid question. The biggest reason, in truth, is this shortage of testing that we are seeing. So when we put the order in place, one of the biggest reasons we were putting in place was to offload the healthcare system. And so causing a lot of people to then go to the healthcare system to get more testing was not really something we thought was the best idea. We thought it would really undermine the purpose of the order. And right now, as you're starting to see, as we move into the holiday season, there is a shortage of the antigen tests again. And so I don't really want to cause a ton of people to rush out and buy a bunch of tests when we really need some of them to be available for people who are sick, for people who are close contacts of people who have been infected. And so that's always what we are navigating, is how do we make sure this order is effective? How do we make sure it has a accommodations for people who truly can't get vaccinated? And those accommodations are you can participate in outdoor dining. A lot of our spaces have really nice heated outdoor dining. Or you can get some takeout, which is a really lovely way to have a family dinner. I have a high-risk family member in my family who is boosted. She's done everything she can, but it makes her nervous, even with the order, to eat indoors. And so we get takeout. We support our local restaurants. We bring it home. We have a lovely dinner. So there's ways to do it. Certainly, if we can get to the point that there's widely available testing, and there's some way to prove that you had that test, that would be something that I would consider bringing into the order. But right now, most of the home antigen tests are all kind of your own word, or maybe like taking a picture of it and showing it to a restaurant. We don't have a good mechanism yet for testing that would easily be readable by our restaurants. So that's why it's not there yet, but I think it's a reasonable request, and it's something that we are continuing to monitor. We just talked about the list of recommended home tests, and I will make sure that it's easy to find on the website. I'll talk to our PIO to make sure that you can find it. This next one was talking about how the Omicron variant became the dominant variant. And so this particular questioner is asking whether or not Omicron provides significant protection against Delta. So we know that Delta, infection with Delta does not provide significant protection against Omicron. And so their question is the opposite true? And in truth, we don't know yet. It's too soon to see if Omicron protects against Delta. But what is primarily driving Omicron overtaking Delta is its transmissibility. It's just so much more transmissible. That's really what's pushing Delta out. Let's see. We talked about the effectiveness of the boosters against Omicron. That's question number 8. So I think we're good. And also they were also questioning about the reduced Moderna dosage. All of the boosters for Moderna were tested at this 0.5. So at the half dose level, and they were incredibly effective. It's not always a more is better situation. What they found when they were testing the different doses of Moderna was a full dose Moderna as a booster didn't provide added protection. It just provided more side effects. And so that's why they went with the half dose. And so you are still well protected. Even if you got a half dose, I would not worry. We talked about, I recently emphasized making sure your face mask fits well and tightly. This person is traveling by plane in February and has a beard. And so they were wondering, should they shave so that they get a better fit on their KN95? And I would say, if that is acceptable to you to shave, I would. So if you're going to be in a high risk setting, you can't get a good seal on a KN95 or an N95 with a beard. I have someone who's very important to me who normally wears a beard, who is currently flying to the Midwest, and he shaved so that his N95 will fit. Now it's not something that's everybody's open to. And so if it's not open to you, wearing a KN95 is still going to be better than wearing a surgical mask. But if it is acceptable for you, that is an option. You may see many of our firefighters have started using goatees or mustaches so they can still have some facial hair, but it fits inside of their N95. That's an option as well. Otherwise, couple other things. So we talked about the eye health tests do look pretty good. They're new. And so we haven't run them through the State Department of Health testing, but the early data indicates that they're quite good. So if you're not finding the other ones we mentioned and you see the eye health, that's a very reasonable antigen test to use. Remember that in order to get an EUA, you need at least a 75% sensitivity. So if you're seeing it marketed in the United States in a pharmacy, it's at least 75% sensitive. The iHealth early data is showing at least 94% sensitivity. All right. This person says, I have been vaccinated and boosted and yet was unable to produce antibodies for COVID because of prior medication use. If I were to contract COVID and needed hospitalization, what kinds of treatment are available to me here and what would be administered? So great question. We do have monoclonal antibodies here. And so that is something that if you're in a high-risk group, like it sounds like you are, would be offered to you as long as you got tested soon enough. So those work best if you get them as soon as possible, preferably within a week of your symptom onset. So that's a key thing. If you start to get sick, to get tested as soon as possible, but we do have those here. Unfortunately, we are seeing some decreased efficacy of the monoclonal antibodies against the Omicron variant in particular. So we are very hopeful about the new Pfizer antiviral becoming available, but it's not available in the United States yet. It's not gotten an EUA. So that won't be available here yet, but we are working very hard to make sure that we are ready when it is. The other things that would be made available depend on how sick you get. So if you do get severe disease, dexamethasone and remdesivir have become pretty much standard of care. And so those are available here and those would be offered to you. Those are kind of the three main parts of treatment. And then of course, supportive care, depending on how severe you would get. The only other thing I would say is there is a new medication that's available for a certain subset of very high-risk people who can't mount an immune response to their vaccine. Particularly, we're thinking about cancer patients here. So if you are getting active cancer treatment, it would be something that I would encourage you talking to your oncologist about. There is a shortage of that treatment right now, but basically it's a preventative treatment that provides you 6 months of protection against COVID-19 if you're in that very, very high-risk group who can't respond to the vaccine. So I would recommend talking to your doctor about that. There are some options to protect you. And I know we're getting close to 1:25, and I want to make sure Willie has some time to talk. Do you want me to take one more? Should we move straight to Willie?
Maybe we should. We do have a 10:30 hearing, and I know Willie's going to announce the recently scheduled booster clinic. So maybe we could get back to that other question in the new year, Dr. Berry.
That sounds great.
Okay. Welcome, Willie.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I got my booster dose actually on Saturday, and was feeling a little bit under the weather yesterday and am still a little bit tired today. So I don't know how you're feeling, Commissioner Brotherton, but definitely packed a little bit of a punch, but very happy I was able to get that done. Saturday's clinics, again, we had a 5 to 11-year-old Pfizer clinic in the morning. We're able to do 167 young ones at that clinic, with the vast majority of those kids being second doses. As a follow-up from a clinic just about a month ago, we were able to get a couple of first doses in that clinic as well, so we'll be following up with them here in a couple of weeks. Then in the afternoon, 388 doses of Moderna for the 18 and up population. The vast majority of those were booster doses, but we did actually have a handful of people, about 10, come in for their first dose. So we were especially excited for those. Then we want to get the community boosted that offers an additional layer of protection. But as Dr. Berry has alluded to time and time again, just getting that first dose for the unvaccinated is a huge first step. So we especially appreciate those folks who came out and finally pulled the trigger and are protecting themselves and those around them. We right now are taking a little bit of a holiday break, but we will be back in action come January. We do know that there's still quite a big demand for booster doses in the community. The pharmacies continue to offer booster doses, although Tri-Area, for example, will be taking a break here for the holidays as well. So we'll have a series of booster dose clinics announced here. The sign-up links, as always, will be on the Jefferson County Public Health website. We'll look to be back in Chimicum on January 8th. Then we're actually targeting South County here the following weekend. And then we're still kind of determining what we're going to be doing the latter half of January. But there will be another schedule of options, again, available on the public health website. We do continue to field calls at the EOC call center, 344-9791. That's not currently staffed with volunteers. However, if you call and leave a voicemail, we will get right back to you. So if you have questions about the booster dose, if you have questions about testing, really anything COVID related, we really do encourage you to call that hotline. Really, because public health, Jefferson Healthcare, a lot of these places are overwhelmed with phone calls and inquiries from the community. So if you have a general question or just want to be steered in the right direction, we really encourage folks to reach out, use that resource first and foremost. There's a good chance we can help you. If not, we'll point you in the right direction. So that's really it for me. And special thank you to Dr. Berry for coming out and assisting in this weekend's clinic in our monitoring area. And we also had a number of other VIPs. Commissioner Brotherton saw a good number of county and city employees as well. So I'm excited to wrap up the year with that big clinic. And then we'll see everyone come January.
And I just wanted to take a moment to thank our volunteers. They ran a really fantastic clinic. They've run quite a few. These are really dedicated folks who do this work for free. And it's just really, it's really exciting to be a part of it and to thank our community members who came out to get their booster and to get their first doses to protect themselves and those around them. The kids in the morning did a fantastic job. It's really impressive to see people coming together to do this. So thanks, everybody.
Yeah, it seems a good time to just reflect on the end of a long, hard year. And I'm just so grateful to everyone at Public Health and Emergency Management for working tirelessly, although I'm sure you are tired, and really hope that folks get some time to recoup a little bit over the holiday. And, you know, this isn't letting up as much as we wish it were. We're still in the thick of it. So thank you so much, Public Health and Emergency Management, volunteers, staff, leadership. This is unanticipated, unprecedented workload, and just so, so grateful that people are working on behalf of community health.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks too. It was, you know, I've been to three of these now, and it was like a finely tuned watch. They get better and better. And, you know, all the volunteers were fantastic. I want to give special props to Terry, who gave me my shot. with, I could barely feel it. And, you know, she told me something that I hadn't been told the previous times, which is just relax your arm. If you don't fight it, it doesn't hurt. And I guess I think that's a metaphor maybe to give to all people. You know, it's for the benefit of our population and for ourselves. So thanks for putting on a great clinic. And I think this is a great approach to getting as many people in and out as possible at one time. So looking forward to seeing it in the new year. And thanks, Willie. And May, I felt great yesterday, but I did fully relax in that 15 minutes. So I don't know if that helped.
Willie probably went right back to work.
He can't stop.
Yeah, we had to clean up.
Oh. Yeah, I believe I saw Willie doing a little more heavy lifting than I normally recommend right after your shot. So.
Well, I hope you can take it easy, Willie. Okay, anything else? Okay, so we are not here next week. No meeting next Monday. And we will see you in 2 weeks in the new year.
Thanks, everybody. Happy holidays.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting.